Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a dedicated and trusted stress and TMS coach based in LA, best known for her heart-centered and results-driven approach. If you're feeling frustrated because you're still dealing with symptoms despite all of your best efforts, you're not alone, and you don't have to figure it all out alone. Jeannie will help you identify what's blocking your recovery, create a simple, actionable plan, and be there to support you every step of the way so that you can heal. If last year didn't bring the changes you hoped for, don't let fear or doubt hold you back from trying something different that will get you results. Don't wait another year to feel better. Go to Jeannie's website, JeannieColwin.com. That's JeannieColwin.com, and book your free 30-minute chat with her. Welcome back to the show. We are here. It is part two with Dr. David Hanscom on his third appearance on the podcast. Let's listen to part two of this interview, shall we?
You can use mindfulness, which you bring on different sensation. Again, you're just separating from the thoughts. The third thing is called cognitive restructuring, where you've heard of cognitive behavioral therapy. Yep. We have a cognitive distortion. You become aware of it, and then you move on to the next step. So I call it thought separation, that you cannot control your thoughts, but you can separate from them. The second thing is huge, which is calm in physiology or calm in the anger. Again, anger is just a term that describes activated threat physiology. And that's what the dynamic healing model does about processing input differently, increasing the resiliency of your nervous system, and directly stimulating physiology. All those things lead to less threat physiology. So, I mean, one example of input is, you know, the rule of never discussing your pain.
It's my favorite. Right? It's one of my favorite rules, Dr. Hanscom's number one rule. It's my favorite one.
But it also means no complaining.
Yeah.
No gossiping. No, not being critical. No giving unasked for advice. No negativity. So that's input. So that's just one tool. Again, less threat physiology. As far as the nervous system, you have anti-inflammatory diets. You have exercise, all anti-inflammatory. Social connection is a big one, oxytocin. And let's see, and sleep. And again, remember when I first started this process, sleep was number one. Without adequate sleep, by the way, which has been shown to cause chronic pain, not to be the result of it, without sleep, nothing else works.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final part of lowering the threat physiology is like breath work, relaxation techniques, breathing through your nose, directly lower inflammatory markers. So that's the same. Okay, so the first part, thought separation. Think about calm and physiology. The third thing is dissolving the ego. And I see that tongue-in-cheek, I'm overstating my case. Of course, we all have egos. And I don't want to get into this too much because this is a whole separate podcast. We have these dark, deep, disturbing impulses. We're programming negativity. We create these stories about ourselves to feel better about ourselves. And through repetition, they become embedded, rigid thinking. And so learning, so then we spend a lot of words. First of all, our ego is made up of words. Secondly, it's mostly cognitive distortions. Should thinking, labeling, catastrophizing, all these things are what we do to create our identity. But we have this negative programming coming into our brain from birth, society, everywhere. And we try to create a different story in our own heads about how we're actually okay, where the world is saying we're not okay. So, and again, I'll just say one sentence on the ego. It's with awareness. Okay, that's a cognitive distortion. I don't really need to believe this, et cetera, et cetera. So as your ego dissolves, you don't have to defend it. And so your brain quiets down dramatically. Okay, so we have thought separation, calm nervous system. The third one is dissolving the ego. But the real healing occurs with neuroplasticity. As you learn to calm things down and get back into your thinking part of your brain, then you can create whatever reality you want. And I have a little saying, to have a good life, you have to live a good life. It takes practice, decides where you want to place your attention. So if you're always reacting, you're in the wrong spot. You want to create what you want. And so my theme going forward, by the way, is from reactive to creative. So with neuroplasticity, as you make repeatedly positive choices from the thinking part of your brain physically changes structure. It's like installing a virtual desktop on your computer. This new virtual desktop doesn't have all these crazy pain circuits. The thoughts calm down. And so the definitive healing occurs with neuroplasticity, stimulating your brain to form the direction that you wish. And it works. In the mental health world, this is not done because they're so busy trying to fix the pain, which, as I said before, inadvertently reinforces it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I got expressive writing of thoughts, and maybe the terminology is different, but I was writing down the four parts. Expressive writing of thoughts, mindfulness.
Basically, we call it thought separation. Now, your thoughts are on the table, you're here. So they're thought separation exercises. So again, mindfulness. Instead of doing battle with the thoughts, you see if you put your brain on a different sensation. And I call it active meditation. I mean, just sit back for a second. Just feel the chair you're sitting in. Mm-hmm. Drop your shoulders, take a deep breath. And my brain's on these sensations. It's not anywhere else.
Yeah.
So that's a way of separating from your thoughts. Your thoughts do what you want to do, but your sensory input's in a different spot.
Okay.
And then, you know, cognitive restructuring, you just become aware that these are cognitive distortions. Again, another thought separation technique. You're not trying to solve them. You're not trying to analyze them. You're not trying to recreate them. You just get to be with your thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I call it thought separation.
And then number two, because I'm trying to write these sequentially. So the thought separation, but then there was the mindfulness and calming. You were talking about breath work and you were talking about some other things. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
The same thing is calming the nervous system. In other words, coming out of anxiety and anger. You cannot control anxiety and anger, but you can regulate it. Mm-hmm. So that's where all these things come in with the dynamic healing model, whether it's changing the input, calming the nervous system, or regulating the physiology directly. There's like 50 different ways of calming the nervous system. So they all work. In other words, there's never one solution, but whatever way you can do to calm down your physiology or basically deal with anger works. It's like shaking the nest. Is that you have the hornets outside, the nest is being shaken. So the answer is calming down your nervous system. Again, all these calming techniques, they call it dynamic healing.
And you mentioned breath work, but you said there's a lot of them. What are a few other ones?
Well, the third part of it. So as far as the dynamic healing model, so if you breathe through your nose, you're stimulating what's called nitric oxide, which is anti-inflammatory. You can rub your forehead, which stimulates the vagus nerve. You can do humming techniques, which vibrates your throat, which stimulates the vagus nerve. Light touch massage, anything that just sort of calms you down is, again, the output part of it or the physiology. Mm-hmm. Again, input, nervous system, physiology, or the threat versus safety. So there's ways of directly, like sounds, like lullaby type music stimulates the vagus nerve, which again, calms the physiology.
I feel like the important distinction to sort of implant here, because things like you mentioned, like massage and deep breathing and breathing through the nose and stuff like that. I think a lot of times, maybe these are discussed as sort of in reverse of what you are, because somebody might think to go get a massage because my back hurts, but you're saying leveraging something like that for only to, like, even if your back does hurt, but going to get a massage or going to do breath work, things like that, for the strict purpose of just calming yourself down, chilling yourself out.
That's it.
Yeah.
So again, the focus is on the tools. For instance, with trigger points or fibrositis, people get irritated trigger points. So physical therapists can actually calm it down relatively quickly, but it comes back. The way it doesn't come back, if we use the other tools like sleep, stress, et cetera, to keep things calmed down. So by definition, a physical therapist can passively help you get rid of the trigger points, but you have to do other tools in addition to sustain it. Mm-hmm. And by definition, by the way, it has to be under your control, patient's control.
Yeah, because I would imagine that feeling of empowerment as opposed to that feeling of, what's the word I'm looking for? Reliance on something else or some sort of an external thing, it becomes empowering to the patient. Is that probably part of it?
Well, it's a huge part of it, but it goes even deeper than that, because in the laboratory, there's these little molecules called cytokines. Have you heard of these cytokine molecules?
So you spent a lot of time talking on the podcast a few years ago about the cytokine storm, because this was in the height of COVID. So
COVID, right.
Yeah, yeah.
The little molecules that communicate cell to cell, it's like how early organisms form. There's inflammatory ones and anti-inflammatory ones. So in the laboratory out of Texas, they've demonstrated that a sense of control actually directly lowers inflammatory cytokines.
Yeah.
So that center control is really, really critical. And if you're at the mercy of things around you, you're in threat physiology. You feel threatened. You don't feel safe. So when you can take control of your life and take control of your symptoms and regulate them, remember, it's a dynamic process. So it's not a sequence. All these things are in play all the time simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And it sounds complicated, but it's not. Okay, so not discussing your pain. That's input. Okay, so you catch yourself talking about your pain, which all of us do, by the way. I don't want to sound like it was like doing something insane here, but it's been a discipline over time to watch myself start to gossip about somebody else. Well, we know that's not the right thing to do, so just stop. Or we complain a lot, just stop. Or we criticize our kids or our spouses, just stop. It's a very concrete tool. By the way, expressive writing is always a necessary starting point. But the second one, which is equally as powerful, is stop complaining. Mm-hmm. No negativity, just stop. And as you know, in our society right now, we blame people, we gossip. The politics right now are horrible as far as character assassination, slander, etc. I mean, since the beginning of time and consciousness, everybody knows this is a bad idea to slander somebody else, but we do it all the time. Well, first of all, it's not nice. You're robbing somebody else of their reputation, so it's aggressive. But on top of it, you're also in threat physiology yourself. You're in fight or flight. If you're talking negatively about somebody else, what's your brain doing?
Attacking. Well,
if you want peace, love, and joy, then do it. Quit giving advice. Quit trying to fix the world. You know, just look at yourself and just be who you are. Calm down. That's your biggest contribution to the world condition. So again, that's where I'd say I would urge you to consider going through the doc journey, you know, over about 3 to 6 months to see your body start to change. And I'll sort of finish off with them. So let's just review the whole sequence here. So preliminary step is that you separate your identity from your physiology. Anxiety and depression are who you, what you have to protect you. They're not who you are. They're gifts. Then the four, I don't want to say phases because these all occur simultaneously, is thought separation. You calm down the nervous system. That's a dynamic healing model. The third part is dissolving the ego, understanding with awareness these mostly cognitive distortions. Then the fourth part, which is definitive, is the neuroplasticity. You're creating a new brain or allowing a new brain to form as you place your attention on what you want, not what you don't want. So again, today I've been triggered a few times already. There's ways of actually letting those triggers go. Family dynamics come into play, which are a huge factor in keeping people in pain. But I think all I can tell you is that these thought patterns are universal because your thoughts are an interpretation of your body's stress physiology. If you're under stress, these thoughts start bubbling to the surface, then the thoughts themselves become a factor that keeps you in stress physiology. And again, my hypothesis is that our inability to escape our thoughts is what drives all mental and physical chronic disease. Other mammals don't have chronic disease like we do. And so our inability to escape our thoughts is what drives chronic disease. Mm-hmm. Everybody has it. It's universal. Nobody wants to talk about it. These are bizarre, crazy, dark thought patterns. You know, I'm not good enough, et cetera. I mean, that's a whole different book I'm writing. But just by the interaction between the human consciousness and your physiology produces unpleasant thoughts. For some people, not a big deal. A lot of people, a little bit disturbing, not a big deal. But for many people, these are disruptive. I had intrusive thought patterns, and they really, really torment people. Again, we have no protection from mental pain. So are we going to drink ourselves to anesthetize ourselves so we can tolerate the hot stove? I mean, these thoughts like having your hand over a hot stove. We'll do anything to escape these, and none of them work.
Can you, we got a few minutes left. I'm curious. I was browsing the blog on your site, backincontrol.com. And there's this blog that looks like it was written a few weeks ago. The Tragic Decline of Luigi Mangione, Pain, right. Isolation, and the Human Survival Response. I want to hear more about that. Because, and I think I've mentioned on this show before, there were some books on this topic, and this is a Sarno-esque podcast. That's kind of why I started doing it. A few of his books were in his Goodreads list. This is obviously right. Something he was researching. So talk about this.
Well, you know, my book was one of his books, right?
Yep.
And I actually was interviewed by Warner Brothers a couple weeks ago because I was one of the books. But I actually volunteered because this is what happens in medicine. This is why I quit my practice. This is a classic, classic case of why people do what they do in mm-hmm. medicine. So remember we talked about when you're trapped, your body goes into fight or flight. Okay, yep. So here's the deal. So I've known for a long time, I wrote a website post years ago called The Pit of Despair. In the 1960s and 70s, Dr. Harry Harlow did lots of experiments with primates, with chimpanzees, and they found out the way to induce depression was they built a cage that was narrow at the bottom, wide at the top. The monkey would repeatedly scramble off the sides of the cage to get out and then fall back down. There was a wire mesh on top of the cage. So instead of having a cage with a door that you open and close, it had the temptation of actually seeing hope. So the conclusion of the experiment was, it's called the Pit of Despair. His staff hated this experiment. After about 2 or 3 hours, the monkey would quit climbing the walls and just sit in the middle of the cage and do nothing. And when they pulled the monkey out of the cage, it would not just go back into normal life. It took 3 to 6 months of reprogramming this monkey back to civilization to get rid of the depression. And so what happens in medicine, we repeatedly dash hopes. We offer treatments that have been documented to be ineffective. Spine surgery is one of the worst. It's a big operation. People's hopes get really up. And this, you know what the success rate for a back fusion for back pain is?
It's like next to nothing, isn't it?
20%.
Yeah.
So what happens, he had I don't know. I did not comment his medical care because I do not know his medical situation. I did not see him ahead of time. I don't know what rehab is in, so I cannot comment on his medical care. I can only tell you that if his situation was back pain alone, it's never a surgical procedure. You never operate on back pain. This little thing called spondylolisthesis or spondylolisthesis is a little bony defect in the back of the spine, which again is never an indication for surgery if it's just back pain. Then even if you do surgery, there's a whole bunch of things you can do to calm the nervous system down before you do surgery to optimize the outcomes. When you operate in the presence of untreated chronic pain, you actually make the pain worse 20 to 40% of the time, even with the perfect operation for the perfect problem. So you're a gentleman who's got chronic pain. He has an operation that was not indicated, has nothing to do with his back pain, by the way, nothing. You're operating in the presence of chronic pain, which makes pain worse 40 to 60% of the time. And then 100% of my patients in chronic pain are trapped, angry, and frustrated, right? So when you're trapped by pain, so what happens to the brain itself is that we do know in fight or flight that the blood supply to your neocortex, your thinking brain, gets decreased. It doesn't function correctly. So your thinking brain isn't even working correctly. Then what the research shows is that when you're depressed, again, remember medicine induced the depression with him, repeatedly offered procedures that didn't work. They did an operation actually probably made his pain worse. I can't talk about his mental state as far as repetitive thoughts, but a high chance under that kind of stress for that long, his brain was probably on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when you're in chronic anger, stress, and you're depressed, the research shows that depression unleashes what's called the hate circuits. So what that is 3 parts of the brain located deep in the brain below the level of the neocortex, and all of us have them. They're under regulation from our thinking brain, or called the neocortex. So in depression, that regulatory process becomes decreased, and these hate circuits, H-A-T-E, hate circuits, are unleashed. So that's where my experience has been in chronic pain, with families in chronic pain. There's lots of domestic abuse taking place, which is brutal. I hate it. I had one person come after me with a gun. I've had several medical colleagues shot by patients because they're so trapped and frustrated. The problem with spine surgery, it's a big operation. You get your expectations way up, then you get them dashed yet again. And the only thing unusual about his situation is that suicide is a major factor in chronic pain. So suicide is not an act of depression, it's an act of anger. Anger is destructive. The ultimate act of destruction is self-destruction. And so I can't go into a lot of details, but I've had 2 patients walk into my office and literally commit suicide. Mm-hmm. I was suicidal in 2002, trapped by chronic pain. I was done. What caused me to commit suicide was this inability to escape my obsessive thought patterns, which were just brutal. I have 20 medical colleagues that are from suicide. So when you're trapped, to me, the only way out was suicide. So the reason why so many murder suicides is that it gets an angry act, not a depressive act. And so it's common to have murder suicides, which I did not understand for a long period of time. Now I get it personally and otherwise. So the only thing unusual about his situation is that, he committed murder but did not commit suicide. So that's what's unusual. Otherwise, 100% of my patients in chronic pain are angry. I'm not justifying his behavior at all. Violence is never the answer. And he chose a random object for his anger. So this guy, head of United Healthcare, didn't create United Healthcare. He's just doing his job. So there's nothing about the situation that he deserved to die for. That's abhorrent and bad. But who's the criminal here? You have a healthcare system that's predatory. It repeatedly raises hopes, dashes them. It induces depression. And then people are angry and trapped. These hates are unleashed. But consider a family where the wife is being physically beat badly by her husband. Mm-hmm. The husband's sexually molesting her daughter. She's totally trapped. She has no means of taking care of herself. And she turns around and she kills her husband. Now, that's a complicated story, but who's a criminal there? I mean, she's defending herself. Her mm-hmm. kids, she's defending her children, for God's sake. And she has no recourse. She can't escape. She'll be stalked. So I'm just saying, I'm not justifying that situation. Is again, these are impossible situations. But when people are trapped in anger, their thinking brain is offline. They can't think correctly.
Yep.
So he's, there's all sorts of theories about who he is or who he isn't. 100% of my patients in chronic pain were trapped and had different degrees of acting out that weren't great.
I wonder if, I don't know enough about the legal system and how all this stuff is going to pan out and things like that, but I wonder how much of that is going to come into play whenever it goes to trial. If that is even going to, or if it's just going to be, facts and the letter of the law, and this is just, it was a murder and it was on tape and all this stuff. And it's a sad story all around.
Well, I mean, I actually wrote a letter to volunteer to help defend him, not to try to get him off the hook, but just to highlight the problem. I don't know what the law is going to say or do with him. I mean, there's definitely a penalty to be paid. And my goal is just to help people understand why he did what he was. Mm-hmm. He's not crazy. He's not mentally ill. But the problem is when you're angry, your thinking brain is offline. All of us, when we're angry, have lost some degree of sanity.
Yeah,
I said this for a long time. I think anger is temporary insanity. Sustained anger is insanity. And what happens when it's sustained, there's a lot of data shows that your brain physically shrinks. You cannot think as clearly. So the medical system repeatedly offered hope, dashed them. The data shows that the chance of his operation working never again. They operated on a part of his spine that was clearly not the source of his pain, was not. There's nothing in this universe that was the source of his pain. So did not need surgery, no matter what it was. It was rear back pain. Now, if he had some leg pain, I'm not going to go into the indication for surgery because I wasn't there. I'm not going to be critical of the surgeon because we're doing the best. I was that surgeon. I spent 8 years doing that operation for back pain because that's the way we're trained. Mm-hmm. The problem here is the medical industry has trapped all of us. As predatory as could be, we all get caught in the systems. Doctors, patients, administrators, the whole system really is geared towards making money. And we don't know you as a person. We don't have time to talk to you. By the way, a high percent of the money that comes in goes into the administrator's pockets directly. It doesn't even go into healthcare. And the number one cause of personal bankruptcy in our country is medical bills. Yeah. And so I think that the business of medicine, I think the doctors are well-intentioned. We're doing what we're supposed to do. I think the guy who got shot was well-intentioned. He was doing a good job. He got to be head of a large company for a reason. So we're all trapped by this whole business of medicine in a terrible, terrible way. So this has become very predatory. And so the biggest problem I have with medicine in general is that you trust your doctor. But right now, the way the business of medicine has us corralled, it's not a trustworthy place to be.
I know we're going to come back and do some more in-depth stuff sometime in the next few weeks. Is there anything else on this particular topic that we should touch on?
I mean, I think getting the human condition back into the thinking brain is a human survival issue. I mean, a lot of our behaviors you see society-wide, worldwide, medical-wide is based on the fact that we're operating from the lower part of our brain. Mm-hmm. So using the tools to calm our nervous system down to get back into our thinking brain is a human survival issue. The thing that's tragic to me is that it's probably not going to happen. The tragedy that makes it worse in my mind is that it's possible. I mean, I have hundreds of patients that have gone to pain-free mentally and physically. And you learn to calm down your physiology, your thinking brain does come back online. You start making better choices. You have a better life. You contribute to society. Right now, we have a universal blame game, victim game. And crossing that victim threshold is that, first of all, you have to recognize it. But think about the blame game we all do. The number one thing we want to do is blame. Blame Biden, blame Trump, blame whoever it is. Mm-hmm. Humans blame other people. In fact, I used to have a joke, which is not a joke. You know, David is my name, blame is my game. I mean, that's the instinct, is to blame somebody or somebody else for our problems. So theoretically, if every human being took full responsibility for every aspect of their thoughts and emotions, we'd have a different planet, because your brains would be back online. When you're angry, your thinking brain just simply is not working. So what's frustrating to me personally is that, again, it's a dynamic healing process. I go into the anger trigger episodes every day, multiple times a day, but it's solvable. I have a different life. My patients who heal have a much different life. They don't only just heal, they thrive. Mm-hmm. So my patients that go through the doctoring sequence or other resources that are similar, again, it's not a magic formula, it's just taking the data, just sequentially go through it, focus on the skill sets, all this stuff goes away. It's not just managing pain. The pain really does resolve.
And this is when you're talking about this is the roadmap, right? The back end control roadmap on your website?
No, I've changed it. So I have a website, backendcontrol.com. It's got all my resources on, like 600 blogs, 120 podcasts, all sorts of stuff. But there's a called the docjourney.com. And that's the sequence where the roadmap in my book doesn't reflect the physiology. The book's a great starting point, gives you a feel for pain, but the doctor takes you on that sequence one step at a time of how to actually calm down and re-regulate your nervous system. It's about halfway down the page on the back end control.
I'm going to link these when this show drops, but I want to have the site open when I'm talking about it or looking at it. Yeah,
but the other thing is there's also an app called the Doc Journey app, which is based on play. The antithesis of pain is play. My wife is a tap dancer, put that together. Then we also have, I actually coach twice a week from Tuesdays and Thursdays till noon. The coaching by itself is of limited benefit, but the coaching with the course or app is dynamite. So what I do is for 1 hour, I do a little relaxation, discuss some concepts. And then we do small group, large group, done. So it's 1 hour, do it twice a week. It's been extremely helpful for people moving forward relatively quickly. And so I enjoy doing it. It's been really a huge adjunct to people getting better.
Excellent. Yeah.
But you find that, you also find that under the docjourney.com.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through it right now. And I'll link to this as well. Cool.
So just in the big picture, my resources are all available on the homepage on the DOC journey. I'm sorry, backendcontrol.com. Mm-hmm. I centralize everything. And then the actual courses are in the product store, the Doc Journey course and app. Bruce Lipton and I did a series of, do you know Bruce Lipton by chance?
Did he write Buddha's Brain? Is that right?
No, he wrote The Biology of Belief.
Okay.
He's a good friend of mine, and he and I think very clearly about this whole process of your play, spiritual perspective, good food, good wine, good friends. So your belief systems dictate your physiology. And so he and I put a series of four videos together, which are also available on the website. So anyway, the process is about 90% self-directed. I encourage people to add on other resources. I don't pretend to be the final answer, but it gives you a foundation to actually thoughtfully put in other resources to help yourself heal. So again, your body knows how to heal. the changes I see are miraculous. It's not from David Hanscom. It's creating the structure that allows the body to heal. I mean, life is a miracle. Healing is a miracle. And your body knows how to do this.
Dr. Hanscom, thank you so much for being here again. Like I said, don't hang up, but once the interview ends, we'll schedule the next one, but I'm excited to have you back. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it.